People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
I look at you like the superstar of the real estate industry. You're really that girl.
I'm a firstborn generational curse breaker in my family.
First year.
And I made $5,000 my first year. I could have made more at McDonald's. I actually didn't know I was going to become an investor. I ended up taking an exam. I failed it 7 times.
Many of us discover God because it becomes a last case scenario.
I've been sexually abused at 5 years old and in foster care most of my life.
I remember growing up being a little girl who wondered why my father wanted nothing to do with me.
She said, I didn't know how to be a mother to you. I inflicted a lot of stuff on myself because of the hurt she caused to me.
You have such high level faith.
Yeah.
Today,
God has given me my identity that nobody on this earth can shake or take from me.
Yeah,
it cannot be shaken. It cannot be taken.
Welcome to another episode of Full Transparency. This is Donnie Wiggins, and I interview amazing guests on this platform and get to know them while you're getting to know them. This is kind of like giving you a fly on the wall perspective of what we'd be talking about if these cameras weren't in front of us. So get ready, because I got my girl in here with me today and I am so excited about this interview. First of all, we're going to start off with not understanding why it took so long to sit on this sofa. But before we go there, y'all, let me introduce you to the baddest real estate investor that is walking the land amongst us right now, Miss Terica Lynn Smith.
Hey,
how are you?
I am good. I am so excited to be here. I'm nervous.
Are you nervous?
I'm nervous.
You are never nervous, Terica. No, that's not true.
I'm always nervous.
You're always nervous.
Yes.
Before live events and stuff, I see you nervous and I think it's the cutest thing ever.
Why?
Because, you know, honestly, it's because I look at you like the superstar of the real estate industry. Like, you're really that girl. And I don't know if you know, like, you know, you that girl, but I don't know if you know that you're that girl to those girls, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're that girl. And so I look at you and it just tickles me sometimes that you get so nervous behind the scenes, because we're good at what we're good at, confident in what we're confident at.
Yeah.
And then the things that are new to us, we still get nervous.
Yeah. Like sitting on this sofa.
Well, we're gonna loosen up. You got your coffee in your cup. We got everything going right here. And it's just going to be real simple. Like, I want to know so much about you. And I'm sure that the audience who's watching this will appreciate the things that we share today.
Yeah.
So let's start from the beginning. You're a real estate investor. Was this like what you thought about becoming as a little girl growing up?
No, of course not. Like, mm-hmm. I would be lying if I said I just thought about becoming a real estate investor. The truth is, I had to find out who Terica was before I became anybody. Mm. Because a lot of the times before I got in real estate, I would start something and I would just quit.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding who Terica Lynn Smith was, you know, with my life battle, my life story, you know, being sexually abused at 5 years old and in foster care most of my life and not having, you know, parents and not knowing who I was. Okay. And so that was like, that was a time in my life where I just didn't know who I was. So I would just do anything and I would, you know, fall for anything. And so I spent a lot of my life going in a circle, if you would, chasing something that I didn't even know what I was chasing. But because I didn't know who I was, I would just chase nothing, if that made sense. So now people see me as this real estate investor. They see the accolades. They see, you know, the success. But the hell I went through to get here, I think, is really what shaped me to kind of be even on the sofa right now, to be able to help others, inspire others, and teach others. But you know, real estate investing is just the title.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that I'm a cycle breaker. Mm. I believe that I'm a firstborn generational curse breaker in my family. You know, I'm the first to see six figures, you know, continuously, and now my children are. So it's a lot more in that title than just investor.
Yeah. I love what you said about the hell that you had to come from.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks ago, I spoke at an elementary school. And when I arrived at the school, I was given the pep talk kind of who I was speaking to, what kind of students I was speaking to. And they asked me to really touch the students who were dealing with homelessness. Mm-hmm. They were dealing with physical abuse. They don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, I was told very specifically that many of these kids will give up before they go to high school. And then I hear you talk about being 5 years old and sexually abused and a foster kid. There's so many people who have a story like that. Number one, some of them are just not even comfortable sharing that story. They're right. embarrassed or shamed by it. But you're not. You leverage your story.
Now.
Yeah. At what point did you become like comfortable talking about it? And I don't even know if it's like a comfortability.
No, that's a great question, because I remember exactly when it took place. 2018.
Really?
2018. Like, I was always the one who would be behind the scene. Like, I always, this makes no sense, but I enjoy being the tail. Mm. I never cared to be the head. Like, I had no desire to want to be in the front. I always felt like people was judging me because of what I went through, and nobody even knew what I went through because I wouldn't even talk about it. Yeah. But I had so many insecurities. And in 2018, I wrote Frightened, Scared, and Alone No More. That was the book that told my life story. And it was the first time that I wrote it. And when I finished writing the book, I was depressed and I was drained.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take a sabbatical because I was at a point in 2018 where I have a lot of success in 2018. You have to imagine, like, I'm at the top of my real estate career. I have a boutique brokerage that's leading the community with diversity and sales, and I am miserable in my life.
Yeah.
And so when I wrote the book, I sent drafts to people in my family out of respect. And they told me, don't you dare publish that book. Don't you talk about our family business. Don't you dare share it. And I said, I'm telling my story. Like, I have to get free. And when I went on a sabbatical, I went there knowing that the people in my life, my family, would probably never talk to me again when I publish this book.
Mm.
I'm talking my father, I'm talking my mother, I'm talking cousins and friends, I'm talking relatives, people that's supposed to love you because you're blood.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sharing my truth, they are uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned no names, but if you know the part you played, you feel very uncomfortable. So when I took the sabbatical in 2018, Eric Thomas was doing an Ignite program up in New York, and I had just finished the sabbatical, and I said, God, I need something to pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm going to end it, because I'm tired. I'm suicidal. I'm tired. I'm a wife. I'm a mother. I'm in ministry. I have an amazing real estate career, but I don't feel no success.
Mm.
And I went to New York, and I heard Eric Thomas speak, and he said, some of you have so much success, but you can't enjoy it because you haven't gotten through your story yet.
Mm.
And to this day, they have footage of me on the front row crying. I mean, I'm laying it all out at this point in time.
Yeah.
And I joined up for the program, and I ended up speaking in front of CJ for the first time in my life, and I fell apart on the stage. And he said, when you get through your story, you're going to be powerful. He said, you're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
And for 6 months, I would have to tell my story and stop and cry, stop and cry, stop and cry. So it was a battle that CJ and ET and all them witnessed me go through. And one day I got up on the stage. It was towards the end of the program. And I was either going to graduate this program or I was quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And I stood up there and I told my story, and there was not a dry eye in the room. There was standing ovation.
Ovation.
Thank you. From CJ, from like everybody in the room standing up, clapping and like just whoop, 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 whoop. And for the first time, I was like, okay, I'm ready to take the stage now. I done got through my story. Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting, Terrica. As you're telling your story, you mentioned that you were suicidal. You were ready to give up. And it's always so, I don't know if interesting is the right word, but we'll use it right here. It's always so interesting to see or to speak to people who seemingly have it made, right? Mm-hmm. You've got the money. You've got the business. You are the black girl who was the black little
successful
girl.
Successful marriage. Children love their mom. Great like relationship.
You have this love around you. Yeah. And yet still there was something missing at the point of when you finally broke free and shared your story. Does the weight off?
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Automatically lift, or is there still a process that you have to go through now to not be like suicidal?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for me, and I can speak on, you know, my transition, when I shared my story, I felt free. Mm-hmm. Like I felt like 1,000 pounds were lifted off of my shoulder. Mm-hmm. You have to imagine, Donnie, I am a 5-year-old girl caring for her siblings, trying to figure out how to feed them while their mother is gone for days at a time. You know, I'm a young teenager in foster care. I'm constantly on runaway. I'm going from group home to group home, foster home to foster home. So imagine all of these years of baggage that is on your shoulder, and you have never been able to release it. Even though you gave your life to God, you still have not been able to fully release all the baggage that's on your shoulder. Yeah. And so the part that when I wrote that book, I had to write a Dear Jesus letter to my mother. Mm. And I had to forgive her.
This is your birth mother?
My birth mother.
Okay.
And I wrote the Dear Jesus letter, and it said, I want you to know that I forgive you. Mm-hmm. I have never told you I've forgiven you. I've never even, like, every chance I've gotten, I tried to curse you out. I tried to hurt you. I've tried to do everything I could to destroy you for what you put me through. But I need you to know that I forgive you. Mm. And she told me, she said, I didn't know how to be a mother to you because I didn't have a great example. And because when she said that, all of the hatred I had for her over all of those years, it began to like dissolve, if you would. Like I went from this cold-hearted, not caring, gonna show everybody in my family I'm better than them, to this vulnerable little girl who literally for the first time saw her mother in a different light. Mm. in a different light.
You saw her as a human.
I saw her as a human. Yeah. And so, you know, walking through the process of getting all of that luggage off of me, I had to go through a forgiving process. Mm-hmm. I had to forgive her, but I had to forgive myself because I inflicted a lot of stuff on myself because of the hurt she caused to me.
Like what?
Like I would just be sexually active with like 10 different people at a time.
I would just give myself away. Okay.
Because I would have thoughts, like most people do drugs to get rid of the thoughts that they're having.
Yes.
Because I was sexually abused, I just did sex.
You had sex.
That's it.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, I'm gonna play them like they play me. Mm. I had no worth or no value within myself. Mm-hmm. I remember when I met my husband and he asked me, he said, hey, how many people you been with? I said, I can't count on my hands and toes.
Okay.
I can't count on my hands and toes. And he said the same.
That he couldn't count on his hands.
He couldn't count on his hands and toes.
Was it him just living his life as a young man?
He was just being a man.
He was just being a man.
A man from New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know? And I was a hurt girl mm-hmm. who found, you know, what I thought was, you know, peace, you know, through what was taken from me at a very early age,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I didn't realize what a gift I had. Nobody never told me that that was a gift. So it didn't instantly, when I shared my story in 2018, it didn't instantly all just go away. I still had to walk that process out. I still had to go through the forgiving process, but I had to go through the mental process of who Terica Lynn Smith was.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like even now, I walk in rooms and everybody is just all dolled up. They're all beautiful. And I find confidence in walking in the room, being myself unapologetic because I know who I am.
Yeah.
I don't have to be dolled up to feel like I'm this person. I don't have to fit in nowhere. Like God has given me my identity that nobody on this earth can shake or take from me.
Yeah.
It cannot be shaken. It cannot be taken.
Yeah. You have such high level faith.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
Right. And anytime we've spoken, like there has not been a conversation that I can think of where God wasn't in the mix. Like
always.
You praise his name regularly.
Yes.
And you mean it.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask this question because it's not only something that I have wondered, like when horrible things happen, mm-hmm. right? But I know so many other people, like we see the comments, we hear people's hearts. When you're going through this phase of your journey, and now you've discovered God and you got faith, was there any moment that you wondered, like, well, God, where were you when I was five years old being sexually abused?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was most of my life. I hated God.
Mm-hmm.
I hated God. Like, I get emotional saying that because, like, the relationship I have right now is like, you were so naive. You know, I think it's convenient for people to place their pain on God.
Mm.
I think it's convenient. Like, anything bad happened, they say it's God.
Okay.
You know, like, God, why you let this happen? Not even intentionally. It's just what people do. Like, God, why did you, you know, allow my little cousin to get killed? Or God, why did you allow me to be sexually abused? Or God, why you gave me these parents that I have? Right. And most of my life I did that. Like, I literally blamed God for everything that was going on in my life. Now, this is the thing. There was a point in my life, Donnie, where I was a victim. It was not right for mm-hmm. what happened to me.
Yeah.
That was not right.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I got to become a victor.
Mm.
And if I live my life in the victim mindset of everybody that hurt me and that everybody who was supposed to love me that didn't love me, I would still be a victim today. I remember when I was homeless up under the bridge with my son, Tariq, and I had just had him. I was 17 years old, and I'm crying. Like, I am bawling under that bridge because I'm like, I hate myself. I hate my life. Why am I here? And I remember looking down at Tariq and making him a promise. I said, Lord, as long as I have air in my lungs, I'm going to be the best mother I can for this boy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that happened up to me up to this point was not my fault. But everything that happens after this point is his. Now, this is the thing. I didn't have a relationship with God like most people would. So I went to God in the most vulnerable state I possibly could, which was pure, which reminds me of Hannah, right? Like welling for a baby. I was welling for my life to change. I was welling for me to be a better mother than for him. Mm-hmm. Like I never wanted him to experience the abuse I went through. Like I was very protective. Like nobody could watch him because I'm like, I don't want him to be sexually abused. I was very protective over, you know, everything with him. And so making him that promise up under the bridge, I said, God, if you take me from this situation, I promise you I'll serve you for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I just want to be better for him. If you allow me to be better for him, I'll serve you. Mm-hmm. I don't care what that looked like. And it didn't happen overnight. I ended up moving into an apartment, getting pregnant again at 19. So now by 19, I got two babies.
Wow.
And Hurricane Katrina hit and I'm trapped in the city. That was my life-changing moments for me was I needed to be a better mom for him. Yeah. So I couldn't be a victim no more. Because if I was still a victim, my son was just going to be a victim of me. And I couldn't allow that. I wanted more for him than what I had for myself. So in that moment, I found a true relationship with God. Like no pastor, no preacher, nobody did that for me. That was my intimate moment with God. Mm-hmm. Now I had to keep my word because he brought me from up under that bridge.
Yes.
And so when I got relocated after Hurricane Katrina to Lafayette, Louisiana, I ended up going to a church and I ended up on my knees in front of everybody in the church. I'm on my knees and I am welling for this relationship with God. Mm-hmm. And I felt the Holy Spirit entered my life at that point, and I never looked back. I never forsaken God. And it's a love that I feel is unconditional. Mm-hmm. Like it's unconditional. When I look at the fruits of my children, I see God's love. When I look at my marriage, I see God's love. When I look at my life and my testimony, I see God's love over me.
Yeah.
You know, and I realize he don't play behind me. And everything that happened, even to this day, anytime somebody play with me, I never wish ill intentions, they life fall apart. Mm. So I realize God don't play behind me.
God don't play about you.
No, he don't.
What would you tell somebody right now who's looking at this and they wish that they could speak about their past and their traumas and everything that they've gone through the way that you've spoken about it and transition it into like an unwavering faith? Because we're really asking people who don't believe, mm-hmm. we're really telling people who don't believe to just believe, like mm-hmm. believe in something, it gets better, trust me. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that person?
It's your decision. You have free will.
Yeah.
You have free will to continue to be exactly where you are. Mm-hmm. It's hard carrying anger. It's like, just imagine just choosing to stay angry all the time.
Yes.
That is exhausting. Mm-hmm. Now imagine carrying anger and carrying hurt and carrying frustration and carrying loneliness, like an abandonment. Like that's a lot to carry. And it's so exhausting. What if you just try to say, you know what? Here, take this load off of me.
Yeah.
Can you just take this load off of me? Just even if I try for a day, could I just try for a day and see what I can and see what kind of results
Ooh,
I can get?
You're speaking to me, yeah. Tara. No, I'm thinking about like my own stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like what I went through was bad enough, mm-hmm. and it wasn't nearly anything like you went through, but we all have our own bad. We all That's have right. our own trauma, right? Mm-hmm. And just being, I remember growing up being a little girl who wondered why my father wanted nothing to do with me, mm-hmm. like nothing, nothing, nothing. And becoming a mom, when Deja's father and I broke up, we broke off an engagement. The one thing that was important to me was that you stay a father to this little girl, right? I did so well picking who her father would be. It wasn't even a question. He's an outstanding dad. But we're so connected to our trauma that it becomes suffocating. You stay in mm-hmm. relationships you don't want to stay in. You stay on jobs. You keep people around you. You keep friends even that you yes. think are friends because we're so connected to going back or re-experiencing that trauma. And I remember when I was going through like my adult worst case scenario, when I lost everything, right? I'm losing everything. I'm losing my home, losing my cars. And I'm at this time, I'm living back with my mom, and my mom walks past my bedroom, and I'm sitting on my bed and I'm laughing, maybe at something that I saw on TV. And she walks past my room, and then she comes back and she's like, with all the things, all the horrible things that you have going on in your life right now, how do you even find the time to laugh?
Wow.
And it was in that moment that I realized that my joy came from a different place. Mm. Like, you weren't going to be able to strip. And it wasn't that she was attempting to strip joy. She just couldn't understand how my world was falling apart around me. I've got this little girl that I really can't take care of. Mm-hmm. And I still found the time to laugh. So when I'm going through this journey, I remember getting closer and closer and closer to God. And I'm just talking to him because you have nothing else. That's right. Mm-hmm. And many of us discover God because it becomes a last case scenario. Like, that's it, becomes right. a last resort. Mm-hmm. We know who he is. We've heard of him, but mm-hmm. we don't build intimately with him. For many of us, even people who were raised in the church.
Yep.
You don't build intimately with him until you have hit your rock bottom and you need him. And I remember sitting at home so many days, just broke. I don't have an opportunity. I don't have a choice. I have to stay home. And you just start talking to God like, God, you know, if you just do this, or how did I get here? And if we go through blah, 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 blah. And I remember asking him, just when I would wake up, just today, let today be good. Mm-hmm. Let today be peace. Let mm-hmm. today be joy. Let today not another bad thing, you know, happen. Like, let me just make some progress today. So when you talk about take it day by day, mm-hmm. that's a real thing.
Literally.
That's a real thing.
And you have to be willing to, you said something to me that is so amazing. It's most people find God at their lowest point. Mm-hmm. When you're living the high life, the best life, yeah. you know, you're not reminded mm-hmm. of, you know, God, yeah. if you would. Right. And so I know for me, that's why every room I walk in, I carry that light mm-hmm. because yeah, I'm in the high places of my life. Mm-hmm. But there's not a room I walk in that I'm not going to celebrate God.
Yeah.
You know, because I know what it's like at my lowest moment, and I know what it's like at my highest moment, mm-hmm. you know, and that changing point from 2018 into now, I said, God, I have asked. What is it that you ask of me? Mm-hmm. 'Cause sometimes all we do is mm-hmm. ask. What is it that you asking of me? What is it that I'm supposed to be doing?
Hey, are you a service-based entrepreneur that helps your clients or customers get some type of result, but you're struggling to post and communicate your message on social media? You don't know how to type a caption that connects and gets people's attention and converts them from just someone who's following you on social to becoming your customer or your client? Great news is, that's my superpower. So I'm sending you 3 text messages every single day, excluding major holidays, directly to your phone of exactly what you need to post to get people to buy and convert them into clients and customers. All you have to do is join my program, Post to Paid, and you can do so by texting the words Post to Paid to 404-737-2767. And the best news is just $37 a month. So hurry up, send me the text. I'm looking for it now.
You see, when we start asking that question, that's when our purpose start becoming clearer for us.
Let your will be my way.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the times, like even with me, like being out, you know, as an influencer now, right? God ordered my steps. Me and David met in the Game Changers program that I was getting through my struggle and through my story. Although I had all of this success, I never knew how I was going to share my story. I never knew how I was going to impact lives. I never knew how I was going to actually walk this out. It wasn't until God sent David over to say, hey, I'm going to help you walk this way. Mm-hmm. God will send you the resources when you start following the will he has for you. Mm-hmm. We have changed thousands of lives through my testimony.
Yeah.
Just for David being obedient, just for even you being obedient, having me here, like thousands of people is going to hear this. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, God, does this honor you? Am I honoring you? Am I in your presence? Because I never want to leave your presence. I never want to do anything that you're not a part of. I never want to operate like that. And I believe that's why we, you know, have the, that's why we have changed the amount of lives we changed, because of our obedience to God. I truly believe that.
I believe it too. I have chills, if you could see them under this hoodie. I have chills right now because there are certain conversations that just make you want to do better. Like you, you recognize like, okay, in this area, I need to be a better person in this area. Like talking to you, Terica, I always leave wanting to get closer, like go have another conversation, like on my way home, like, God, we need to talk. Yeah. We need to have a conversation, yeah. Because I have things that I do that are really intentional. Like you said, when we're experiencing our highs, I think that sometimes when we're experiencing our highs, I think people really feel like they're connected to God. People think they know him. People think they're honoring him. But it's kind of, I know for myself at some point in my life, it's kind of been an afterthought, like a really simple, thank you, God. Mm-hmm. Thank you for this. Thank you for that. But never really spending and sitting in that intimate moment for too long. Mm-hmm. And it's been for me, maybe the last 7 years or so that I've just been reminded, 7 years or so that I've reached this level of success that I remember to honor him on the other side of my worst case scenario, right? And so I'm really intentional. I love praying in the shower.
Yes.
And I'm journaling and I'm journaling like I'm writing to God or to the God in me. Mm-hmm. But I have this gratitude alarm that's set for 8:30 p.m. Eastern in my phone every single day. And at that moment, I have to thank God for the things that we would otherwise take for granted, right? Like maybe today for this conversation, for the opportunity to have a conversation, not just with Terica, but to have a conversation with Terica about my relationship with God, to have a conversation that it opens up so many other people to that relationship as well, because it's so important that we don't just fall back on him.
That's right. That's
it's so important. So Hurricane Katrina, what year did Katrina happen?
2005.
Now you have two babies. What is your next step? God has brought you from underneath that bridge. You're in your apartment, but you're still obviously making some sketchy decisions.
Oh, for sure.
At that time, what happens next?
So after Hurricane Katrina, we ended up being relocated to a city called Lafayette, Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I went to real estate school.
Okay.
I knew absolutely nothing about real estate. My food stamps.
You were selling your food stamps.
I was selling my food stamps. Okay. That's right. So the first, so after Hurricane Katrina, FEMA gave us a check for like $2,000. And so I was able to pay for the schooling for that. But the exam, I had to sell my food stamps.
Listen, food stamps was a real hustle.
It was a real hustle.
I've been there, done that.
Yes. I'm out of that period where they can come after me.
Right. You know.
But yeah, you know, but I did what I had to do. You know, I didn't have $100 to be able to take the exam.
Okay.
And so the funny part about me in real estate school was I knew nothing. Nobody around me ever talked about owning real estate. And I say this all the time. I did not grow up hearing people say, oh, I got to go pay my mortgage.
So how real estate? Why would you even choose that path?
Because, when I got pregnant with my son, I was traveling the road selling magazines. And so, yeah. So by the time I was 16 years old, I had already been to 42 states. So I traveled around the world, knocking on doors, selling magazines.
How did you make it from state to state, Terica?
Because I was...
You were living under a bridge. Yeah. You've been in more states than me.
Right. That was 17, though. But you see, at the age of 16, the state emancipated me. They considered me a legal adult because I was in foster care.
Okay.
And because I stayed on Runaway so much, they just said, look, we got to get her out the system. So I ended up going on the road with this magazine crew that would travel from state to state. You know, you call this number in the newspaper. They put you on a Greyhound. And then before you know it, you're in California.
Because they needed salespeople.
They needed salespeople. Gotcha. Okay. That's right.
Okay.
And so I literally would work from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. going up and down in California, Arizona, Colorado, all over the world selling magazines. And I was their top salesperson.
Okay.
As a teenager. And I would ask people when I knock on their door, I would be like, so what is it that you do for a living? And they all would say real estate. And I didn't know what real estate was. They just said that. That was the first time I heard real estate. I never heard it before I started traveling and selling magazines.
Okay.
So after Hurricane Katrina, I'm like, this is a fresh start. I need to do something different. gonna get into real estate.
Okay.
So I had to look up on the internet what real estate was. I found a real estate school and I ended up going to the school and I knew nothing about real estate.
Okay.
Okay. So Donnie, I didn't even know what a mortgage was. Something so simple, I did not know what a mortgage was.
Yeah.
I didn't know what a lien was, an encumbrance, an encroachment. It's a completely different language.
Okay.
So I'm sitting in real estate school, and at this point, everybody's frustrated with me because they can't get through a lesson without me raising my hand.
Raising your hand. Yes. Like, I'm sorry. Can you just break that down?
Yeah, can you break that down for me, please? Right? The only thing I understood was how commissions work. I knew how math worked. Mm-hmm. That's the only part I was good at. Vocabulary, it was not my strong suit.
Mm-hmm.
But I ended up taking an exam. I failed it 7 times. Literally. And I would literally drive back and forth because you had to drive an hour to go take the test.
Okay.
So not only do I got to pay $100, I have to come up with the gas money to be able to go take the test.
Mm-hmm.
So after I passed the exam, I thought I was going to be rich. I was like, I got this piece of paper. This is my license to be rich, because everybody I talked to said with these big houses, they were in real estate.
Yeah.
I'm in real estate now. I got the paperwork and I made $5,000 my first year.
First year.
My first year.
Wow.
I could have made more at McDonald's. I was over this. Okay. But I believe God made me street strong for a reason. I'm not easy to quit. Like I won't quit easy. Like you have to literally kill me for me to stop.
Mm.
I'm not joking.
You're not stopping.
I'm not stopping. There's not a human alive that can get in my way, and I will not run them over if they challenge me with what God has called me to do.
Oh.
There's no stopping me.
Okay.
And so when I get in that mindset, my sleeves are rolled up. I'm going to do this. So I went on back to my roots. I started door knocking to get leads in real estate.
Okay.
You know, I was doing what everybody else was not willing to do. And I eventually ended up landing my first subdivision, which means I represented the seller for the entire community. I sold all of the homes and I became Century 21 Centurion agent,
their top agent. Yes.
And then from there, I was like, yo, I can do this.
Mm-hmm. But what year are we in now?
2007.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I was like, I can do this. And the cool thing about me, you know, becoming the Centurion agent was that I had no leads. I had no handouts. I literally bootstrapped that. I went and knocked on doors and found my own leads. I created my own leads, you know, and that goes back to my tenacity of not giving up, even when I made that promise to my son up under the bridge. Because you got to remember, I'm still holding on to that promise.
Yes.
He will not experience this. So I can't afford to quit. I can't afford to give up. I got to keep on going. Like, I got to bulldoze through this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did, you know. And shortly afterwards, I ended up becoming their manager, their sales manager. After I became their sales manager, I opened my own brokerage. After mm-hmm. I opened my own brokerage, I became an investor specialist. And after an investor specialist, I became an investor myself.
Mm. So after working with all those investors, you're like, okay, this is where the money is.
Yeah, I shared this story yesterday with David. He never heard this story, but I actually didn't know I was going to become an investor. That's how God ordered your steps.
Okay.
Like I had no desire to become an investor. I didn't know I was doing investor activities for investors. So what that means was I was so good with making my 3% real estate commission,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we're taught to make in real estate, that I was helping these investors make so much money, they was going to keep me at that 3%.
Mm-hmm.
And so one day at the closing table, the attorney handed me my investor folder mm-hmm. with his proceeds in there. Now, mind you, I was the project manager. I was the realtor who found the property. I did the project management for it. So I did the rehab. I brought the contractors in. I chose the paint colors. Heck, I even chose the outlet colors. Okay. I did everything in this house. Everything. And then he handed me my investor folder and I open it and I see 6 figures. I can't unsee that.
Mm.
And you know what he do? He pulled that folder back and said, oh, I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong folder.
Oh.
And then he gave me mine. That 3% looked like nothing to
Very
me.
Very different.
I'm like, I put in all the work and I did all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And my investor is smiling, shaking my hand, telling me how amazing I am. I'm the best.
I bet they are.
And so I said, you know what? Now, mind you, this is very risky for me to do this at this time. Okay. I needed these investors because I'm still, you know, living paycheck to paycheck at this point. Okay. Yeah. As a realtor. Mm-hmm. And I literally called all of my investors and I said, hey, I'm not going to do all of the work and just get paid a 3% realtor fee no more. It was like, okay, so what you going to do? I said, it's going to be 50-50. I'll find a deal. I'll do the project management on the deal. You just put up the funds. And at closing, we split everything. And so they said, well, why would we do that? I said, okay. I lost all my investors except one.
Okay.
That one investor said, shoot, I don't got the time. You do a great job. You can do it. And he stayed with me. 50% he paid me. And you know what? When he started talking to his friends, he said, hey, I got a realtor. She'll find the property for you. She'll do all the work. She charged 50-50.
Yeah.
And I rebuilt my clientele that way.
Because if they weren't going to pay you, they're going to pay somebody.
They're going to pay somebody.
The last thing these investors have time to do is to manage the project themselves.
Especially when they're making millions of dollars doing their career. You know what I'm saying? It makes no sense for them to come down to this level to do that. They don't have the time.
Do you still have a relationship with that one client?
I do.
Said yes.
Yes, I still have a relationship.
Do y'all do
with
deals
him.
Together?
I'm too big now. So, no.
Did you say you too big?
Yeah.
No, I don't do deals like that anymore. Nah. What do you do now, Terrica? Nah.
So, and I say I'm too big now because at the end of the day, when I realized that I can just go do this on my own and, you know, at the end, and he's good too.
Okay.
Like, we're still great friends, but he realized that, you know, we mutually agreed that it's not beneficial for us at this point.
When you go through this process, you get the one client who stays mm-hmm. and then he starts to introduce you to his community. And mm-hmm. now you've got more and more and more investors. I'm sure just like you saw the 6-figure check,
mm-hmm.
you possibly saw some deals go wrong too.
Mm-hmm.
What gives you the courage to say, I'm putting it all here on this?
Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty much, you know, I'm very conservative when I buy.
Okay.
So you got so many people that be selling you the oohs and the ahs. I don't do that. I just look at the numbers and I calculate the risk. Mm-hmm. I look and see if this risk is worth it and or not. You know, you ask me what I do now. That investor, he still invests in communities with me.
Okay.
We don't do fix and flips and all the stuff that we did in the beginning. And I have a pool of investors that come in and invest in different multifamily deals with me, different developments with me, and, you know, just different opportunities that's in real estate. And mm-hmm. so on the development side, I find that it's a lot more fulfilling for me because I'm taking something and I'm like literally bringing it to life, if you would. Like, you know, I'm carrying this development, which is like my baby, for 9 months to a year. Mm-hmm. And then when you build the first home on this property or you lay your first road down and then you got to come up with the street names and all of that, to me, that's more fulfilling than, you know, the fix and flips and things like that. You know, I still got one partner that like fix and flips.
David,
mm-hmm.
for sure. I could imagine. Do you remember your first deal?
Oh,
your very first
as a realtor or as an investor?
Yes. Your first investment deal.
Yes, it was my Huckleberry. It was my $5,000 property I bought with my tax return.
Can you find me a $5,000 property today? We buying the city up. You hear me?
Yes.
Point me to the area. Listen, I would probably be more of a fix and flip kind of, you know, I'm more of a long-term hold, but I would definitely be the fix and flip because I got to see some money back like mm-hmm. quickly, right? Like you're on projects that's going to be here for a very long time.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm generational.
You're generational. And I respect that. I respect that. I do. I admire that about you, but show me some money by the end of the month. Yeah.
You know, fix and flips is the highest risk form of real estate investing.
Really?
Yes.
What's the lowest risk form?
Buy and hold.
Buy and hold.
It's the most boring, but it is the most lucrative.
But I look at it like this. I buy and hold, right? And then I need some money.
So pull it from your bricks.
pull it from my bricks. Tell me what the bricks are.
Yeah. So it's like your investment, your multifamily investment or your development. Like that's just a bank account that's sitting there for you. Literally, you can literally leverage the equity out of that building if you need it to go buy something else. You don't have to just leave it in the bricks. But a lot of the times, you know, with this fix and flip, so many things can go wrong along the way. Mm-hmm. I know because I've been doing this for 19 years. I've seen it, right? Mm-hmm. And I've also seen the rewards of fix and flip. So I'm not saying fix and flips are bad or anything. I'm just saying now that I'm older and wiser, I understand the longevity of my investment being in a buy and hold in communities because of the compound that I'm going to get on that investment than I would a one-time fix and flip and I'm done. And you got higher capital gains tax. It's all kind of stuff that's associated with that fix and flip that you have to consider. Versus with my multifamily, I can do a 1031 exchange, which means that it's just a tax vehicle that I can ride until I'm ready to literally realize the gains on that property. And so I think as an investor, we see what, you know, and it's an entry, it's an easy entry level to get into fix and flips. I would agree. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, because I'm thinking about for some of people who are watching, I'm not talking about myself necessarily. But for some of them whose checkings and savings are set up a little differently than yours, fix and flip is a good starting place.
I think people need to change their mindset.
Okay, tell me. Change our mindset.
Yeah, everybody just say fix and flip is a good starting place because everybody say that.
Okay.
Right? But the same amount of money it takes to invest in a fix and flip is the same amount of money it takes to invest in a multifamily, depending on the size of the project. If you get a $1 million fix and flip and or a $1 million apartment complex, you still got to put 20% down.
That's true.
So why would I not want to get residual income every single month if I got to put the same 20% down? If you can afford 20% on $100,000, you can afford 20% on $100,000 multifamily property. Yes or no?
For sure.
Okay. And with your fix and flip, you're going to fix it up. You're going to flip it. It's going to be gone. You're going to pay capital gains and you're going to be done, right? And you got your money. Mm-hmm. On my multifamily, I'm going to put 20% down. I'm not going to have to pay any taxes because I'm going to get a loan on it. And so I can't be taxed on debt. So not only that situation, now I got checks coming in every single month. So while you got your one check and done, I'm still getting a check for the next 5-10 years, however long I decide to hold this asset.
Yeah.
On top of that, now I get the depreciation on my taxes because I do a lot of investments and I need that depreciation schedule. Not only that, my equity is building up. Not only that, it's on my personal financial statement where I'm able to leverage it now. So if my banker sees that I have a certain amount of equity in there, they may say, well, look, do you want to pull from here to invest here? I may get in my next deal with $0 because I have so much equity in my bricks. So I think it's a mindset.
It's a mindset. There's a fear and there's just a lack of information. Like I'm sitting here and let me tell you what's crazy. I was in real estate and I was a property manager for 13 years.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I didn't know
that. That's my professional background, right? You would think that I'm like, sign me up. I literally managed the accounting specifically for multifamily developments, right? And I saw the income statements. I see the rents being collected. I'm looking at how much money a month, you know, and I managed properties that were up to 1,000 units.
Wow.
So I know up here how to do it. I know if I type out the job description, how to do it. It's just, I was never using my own money, right? The strategies and the tactics that I had to go through to make sure people were paying their rent or the marketing efforts that I had to put out to make sure people were leasing these units and, you know, the hard hat tours that we were doing to determine if an asset was a good buy or a bad buy. Like it was coming from a different place because it wasn't my money.
That's right. That's right.
And now to think about like going in, there's just a fear. If I'm being honest, there's nothing else other than a fear associated with putting my own money up and going and doing the same thing that I was doing for somebody else for 13 years.
And you know, fear and favor can't live in the same room.
You better shut me down. Terica Lynn said fear and favor can't live in the same room. Donnie, you better choose one right now. What you choosing, fear or favor?
That's right, because you got too many years of experience not to be getting those residual checks.
That is true. You ever have conversations with people that sometimes you like, I'll have to talk to them another day because I know if I talk to them, they're going to have me involved in making a big decision. Like, I'm going to be buying something, doing, like, that's how I feel right now. Another person is like, if you ever spend one-on-one time with Neo. Mm-hmm. Neo called me yesterday and I looked at the phone and I'm like, I don't know if I want to take this call because it's like, I love him.
Yeah.
And I love what he brings to my table. Mm-hmm. But having a conversation with a Neo, you got to approach that conversation like we're ready to make a move.
That's right.
That's what you're making me feel on the inside. It gives me this nervous feeling on the inside, just kind of seeing and being connected to you. What's your, like, what's your strategy for, like, you say you look at the numbers. Let's talk about the numbers. Like, what are the numbers that you consider before making a deal?
So I think the biggest thing for me is my return on my investment. Mm-hmm. You know, equity is very important. So whenever I'm analyzing a deal, and we can just kind of walk through, like, let's just say a multifamily deal, right? We'll start with an easy number. Let's just say $100,000 four unit deal. And you have four units mean four doors, right? That don't mean four individual properties. It just means one building has four doors up under that roof.
Right.
And each door brings $500 a month. That's $2,000 in rental income. Mm-hmm. Let's say 50%. The 50% rule is 50% of your expenses. That's just the estimate, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just say it's $1,000 a month with your mortgage payment, you know, taxes, insurance, and, you know, operating expenses. Mm-hmm. And so you have $1,000 left in cash flow a month.
Okay.
So if I'm looking at, if I put in $100,000 and I'm making $1,000 a month on my investment, you know, that to me falls within the 1% rule, you know, and the 1% rule is that I want to be able to generate at least 1% of the income off of that property. So if it's $100,000 times 1%, I need to make $1,000. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm looking at my formula, and that's a quick formula.
That's a quick one.
Yeah, that's a quick formula for people. So if you're looking at a $200,000 building, then you want to make sure that it can generate $2,000 a month. Some people are a little bit more conservative. They may do the 2% rule and they have to generate $4,000 a month. It just depends on the actual numbers, you know, of the actual investment itself, how much I got to put out. If I got to put out on $100,000, $20,000, you know, for a down payment, then you're going to say, okay, well, how long would it take me to recoup that $20,000? You know, and so there's so many formulas we use in real estate when calculating these investments and deals. Like, I wouldn't just be able to teach it in 5 minutes.
For sure.
Yeah, but a quick rule of thumb is a 1% rule.
Yeah, and somebody would look at that, somebody not necessarily being me, but somebody would look at that and say, $1,000 a month, you want me to hold up, you know, let's say $20,000. It takes me 2 years now to at least just earn back what I put in there at $1,000 a month. It doesn't seem worth it.
Let me ask you a question. What you do for $1,000 a month?
That's a good point. And okay, what do I do for $1,000 a month? You know, my YouTube is now making $1,000 a month. I have things that I do. At a time, it used to be very difficult to earn $1,000 a month.
Most people got to wake up and go to work to get that $1,000 a month.
Most people got to wake up and go to work.
Right. Most people that's listening is going to say, yo, that $1,000 is nothing. But it's different when it's passively.
It's different.
Yeah. So if your income is passive, you're not having to go and earn it.
You know what, David? I'm in here thinking, I literally just said out of my mouth, my YouTube is now making $1,000 a month, right? Mm-hmm. I have this brand new YouTube channel that you guys are watching this on right now. And we've been working really hard, Terica. I'm talking about thousands, tens of thousands of views. How do we put out the right content? What do we need? What's the thumbnail? What guests do we need to have on the show? What's really going to make the needle move? There's a lot of thought work in that. You would think that it's incredibly passive, but the truth of the matter is it's not, right? We have to sit here. We have to do this. We have to have interesting conversations. You have to know what keywords to put in your description and what tags. And you got to think through all this stuff. Like, David has even invested in YouTube strategists and people to tell us, like, really how to grow. It's not as passive as you think. Mm-mm. And you literally just said, what do you do for $1,000? And my response was, my YouTube channel makes that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, you're making that. I'm mm-hmm. making that. I'm sitting here and I'm doing the work. Real estate is literally as passive as it can get almost. You think about, you go and you find the property and you reach a certain level of your career where that's not even really you scouting mm-hmm. properties anymore. You do the math. That's quick and easy.
Yeah.
You put the right team in place.
Yeah.
Once you do this repeatedly, that becomes quick and easy. And you're literally making passive income.
That's right. You just put in a little elbow grease. That's what I tell people. If you can put a few dollars here and a little elbow grease, it's going to pay off. That's what I told Dave a few years ago. I said, look, just give me your extra money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Don't even think about it. Just give me your extra money. You know, and now we're working to get him to like $10,000 a month right now, I think, you know, mm-hmm. which is a small number.
Yeah.
You know, but he has to continue investing to mm-hmm. be able to get there. But what happens is when you're making $10,000 a month and you have to do nothing for it, you have a property management company. So all they dealing with all your tenant calls, your repairs, they dealing with all of that, right?
Yeah.
All you're doing is literally getting a check every single month. David can't tell you where his property is located. He can't tell you what's going on with him. He don't even know his tenants' names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But he get his checks.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? And so he don't have to do anything extra other than what he did in the beginning. So he get it started. He vet the deal. He make sure it's a great investment. And then his checks start coming.
Yeah.
You know, the first of the month is a great time for me. I never understood that song with Bone Thugs and Harmony. Right?
It's the first of the month.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Now I be
show
doing
cash,
that.
Show yeah.
I do that dance every single month.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I love mailbox money.
Mailbox money.
Yeah, I call them deposits. You know, go get my deposits. You know, I enjoy those deposits.
Mm. So, Terica, you're always investing in something. Every always. Time I go on your Instagram, you're like in a different city. You have to look at this property. And so you talk to me about your buying strategy very mm-hmm. loosely, very light. But that's major, right? Mm-hmm. Because I didn't even know to think about a $1,000 return mm-hmm. on my investment each month, or 1% rather.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good starting place.
Mm-hmm.
You're constantly investing. Hey, CEO Donnie Wiggins here, and I am so excited to announce my new mentorship group is dropping. You may have already heard about it, but I wanted you to hear it from the horse's mouth, directly from me. My new mentorship group, Actionable CEO, for entrepreneurs who are interested in professional growth, personal growth, and financial growth. You want to learn from me. Y'all have been asking for this for the last 3 years, and I have finally brought Actionable CEO back to serve you. Every single week, direct mentorship from me. You will also hear from other people who are in my community that I believe will be greatly impactful to you. You're going to get behind the scenes. We're going to be spending some time together live. This is not pre-recorded. This is live mentorship. So if you are an entrepreneur and you want to be connected, feel connected, you want to elevate your brand, you want to elevate your life, you want to elevate your level of success, Actionable CEO is for you. ActionableCEO.com. See you there. Give me an idea about what risk management looks like for you. Like, how do you know when you can't buy anything this month? And how do you know how much risk you're willing to put in any particular deal?
I stick to the formulas. I don't go outside the formulas. If the numbers don't work, I don't buy.
Mm-hmm.
And I also go off of, you know, my gut. Like, if, like, there was a property that was really, like, all the numbers checked off, everything checked off on it. But it's something that wasn't right with that property that just didn't sit right with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up not buying it because I had to go with my gut. I always respect my gut feeling. I believe that that's the Holy Spirit talking to me.
Mm.
And so I said no. My partners was like, you crazy. This is a no-brainer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else went and bought the property. There was a tree root in the middle of the foundation. The house was being split down the middle.
Split down the middle. Wow.
How do you fix that?
Yeah.
Right? So, and now that house is tied up in all kind of lawsuits with the builders and all of that. So, one, you got to know your numbers and your formulas. But two, you got to trust your gut. You got to trust your instinct and make sure it's not fear, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't have fear when I invest because the numbers are the numbers. But when something triggers me to say, yo, something not right here,
mm-hmm.
and I can't pointed out, I wouldn't have been able to tell. It was underneath the foundation. But then to come to find out the truth of what was going on in that property, I was like, oh, thank you, God. I trusted you. I believe you.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't just go buy that property because the numbers was right and my partners was down my neck saying buy the property.
Yeah.
I was like, something's not right with it. So, you know, I think that people have to trust their gut and they have to trust the formulas.
Yeah.
And then also, if you're working with people, don't just be so free to trust them. Challenge them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people don't challenge people enough. Like, I tell people that come into my program, you know, whether you hear me speak on the internet or not, go Google me. Go in the city and ask people if they know me. Go see if I'm really doing what I say I'm doing. There's a, I'm not going to say his name, but I have a partner who's known all around Atlanta. I mean, he's big, okay? And he made a phone call. I didn't know this, but he made a phone call in Louisiana because he has a lot of reach, and he wanted to know if I really was who I was off the internet. Meaning, do she really have this type of real estate? Number one. Number two, is she trustworthy? Number three, is she God-fearing? Like, he literally went and vetted me. And I get a phone call from somebody in the community. They say, hey, we got this dude, because they don't know how big he is. They're like, hey, we got this dude calling to check and see if you who you say you are.
Fact check. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. What he wanted to know? Like, do you really buy real estate? Do you really own this? Do you really do that? And so I said, oh, okay. So I didn't even ask what the response was because I know who I am. And so then I get a phone call back and he was like, you really that person, huh? And I was like, well, yeah, I heard you was calling around checking on me, huh? I said, I love that.
Yeah.
Always do that.
Yeah.
Always verify who you're doing business with. And so I would say, you know, make sure if you're getting in business with someone, you fact check them.
Yeah.
And don't feel bad. If somebody get frustrated or intimidated because you fact checking them, they probably don't need to be your partner.
Don't do business with them.
That's right.
Yeah. Anybody who's standing on something solid is okay with you doing.
You can look all up under my hood.
You can look. Okay, so I want to know about the deal that changed everything for you. Like, what's your favorite deal, if you've had one, that you've had so far? And then what's also a deal that you took maybe your biggest loss on that could have taken you out of the game?
So my favorite deal, I don't think it changed the game for me. It just changed the way I invest. Is the deal that me, David, and Neo did recently.
Okay.
It's our HAP contract. You know, we're making, that property grosses about $600K a year.
Okay.
You know, and it's a government contract. And so we get our checks like clockwork every single month. And we have long-term residents in our property. You know, and the HAP play is such.
What's HAP?
It's like the housing authority program.
Okay.
So it's like we're the Section 8 of Section 8. So you know how you have the housing authority, which most people call like the projects. Well, that whole community is subsidized by HUD. You only can have HUD residents there.
Right.
So we don't get 60 Section 8 checks. We get one Section 8 check.
Right.
One HUD check, if you would. And so with this property, it's my favorite because it's the easiest. We went in, it took us 2 years to do construction and renovations. We finished it, it stabilized, the checks just come. And we just acquired another one in Alabama, which is the exact same thing. It's a residence where we only allow 52 and older to live there. They're there until they expire.
Yeah.
You know, and again, we get, you know, checks like clockwork there. So those are like, I would say those are my favorite investments, and those, and like, we have completely cut out all the other type investments we do. So like, we literally focus on HAP contracts and we focus on developments. That's our bread and butter. We don't really go in between unless somebody, you know, knucklehead pulling me to do a fix and flip. And you know,
I mean, they're exciting. You got to add a little excitement.
Everything is exciting to him. No, he want to do tax liens, tax deeds. He want to do fix and flips. He want to do everything that is earned.
I just saw him on the auction stairs looking for tax lien properties.
I mean, a kid at a candy store, okay?
I used to manage a large portion of my career was HAP properties, right? And in property management, or if you sit on site as a realtor, everybody's goal is to get the A plus property. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants the high rise in the city and to manage it. And let me tell you something, I have never had in my career during that time a harder time collecting rent mm-hmm. and turning these properties than working at the A plus properties. When I worked at what was considered my C plus, C minus properties, mm-hmm. which are going to be your Section 8 mm-hmm. housing authority properties, when I tell you those residents take so much pride in their home, Section 8 will come out and do like their monthly or bi-monthly check. You get your check like clockwork. In fact, our check didn't even come in on the 1st. It came in on like the 30th.
Yeah, it come in early.
You get your money. Your property is always cash flowing. You're always meeting your numbers, mm-hmm. right? It's a fantastic strategy just even for the individual investor for as sure. well.
I believe we're recession proof. Like, yes. Yeah, I believe that because we don't
income is never going away.
No, it's not. And HUD is not going away. Mm-hmm. You know, there may be times, you know, at the federal level where they hold funds, but they always they're like the Lannisters. They always pay their debt. Mm-hmm. If you Game of Thrones out there, mm-hmm. you know, but, you know, the HAP program, and what I love, let me tell you this, the reason I love being around my people.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. Like,
yeah, I can go and buy Class A assets and Class B assets all day, every day. But I get great joy in being able to talk to people that's in communities that I come from. Yeah. I understand their pain points. And guess what? I get to teach them about ownership.
I was going
to
say, not only do you understand where they are today, you can teach them about where they can go.
That's right. And yeah. when they see me, they like, yo, if she can do it, I mm-hmm. can do it. You know, now, mind you, I have to get in their face sometimes, too. Like, you're not going to play with me. OK, because right. we're going to do this. All yes, right.
This is business.
We will dog walk this. But
we will dog walk it because you still this. Live inside of Terrica a little bit. Hood, yeah, you know what I mean?
You know, but I would say this. You asked me about the property that taught me the most is a deal that I had with that investor. We lost $200,000 on a fix and flip. Mm. $200,000. And you see the character of someone when you lose money together.
For sure.
Right. And this was a property we lost money because we had in the middle of construction, a sinkhole took place in the backyard and we lost half of the house. So it wasn't no fault of anyone's. It just what happened in a deal. Wow. And so we had to rebuild the half of the house. We had to do mold remediation for the entire house because mm-hmm. of the simple fact that the back half fell off during the sinkhole. And then we had to do all of the yard work, which was thousands of dollars, mm-hmm. but they had put an old swimming pool back there and it sunk. So we went through that process. And one of the things that I learned through that process was that there's nothing ever guaranteed in real estate because we was going to make almost $500,000 off of this. It was a no brainer. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like everything was right on this property. But we ended up licking our wounds and getting out of it. Mm-hmm. The part that taught me about this property was that I'm happy that I had the proper paperwork in place, and that I had a partner who was honorable on this particular one. Cause I had another sinkhole where the partner was just dumb and I had to put up all the money to get out the deal, but I didn't have an operating agreement.
Okay.
So I didn't really detail that, but in this agreement, this partner honored what we did and we split the losses down the middle and I licked my wounds and I just kept on going.
You make multiple millions of dollars annually as a real estate investor. Like you literally wake up and play Monopoly in real life.
I literally love playing Monopoly in real life.
Yes.
Yes.
You talk about though being around your people. I've heard you speak about diversity and inclusion so many times. Why is it so important to you? Like you could take these millions and keep doing what you do and hold these deals to your chest and make all the money.
Yeah, but I was there. Remember? I was suicidal. Mm-hmm. I was doing that. I had the money, keeping it to my chest, had my head down, didn't know David, didn't know E, didn't know what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. I was miserable. Mm-hmm. So now I'm able to teach people what I've been through and what I've learned and what I know now. Mm-hmm. It's so fulfilling. It's not mine. We're just in, like, we have temporary custody of what we, of these blessings God has given us. God cares about his people. point out a time in the Bible where he didn't care about his people. Mm-hmm. Like every time he placed someone in charge of his people, it was to better them. Mm-hmm. It was to give them dominion. It was to take them out of captivity from up under Pharaoh. Mm-hmm. When is it not our responsibility to lead the people the right way? Mm-hmm. I do a lot of teaching for free. I also charge for coaching and programs, but at the end of it, I'm still fulfilling my purpose and doing exactly what I'm called to do. Yeah. I make sure I give out as much free stuff as I do that I charge. Mm-hmm. It's just what I do.
Yeah. But you're always telling people like, you can do this.
That's right.
Not only can you do this, you need to do this.
For sure.
Yeah. You're on a mission.
That's right.
To really introduce all people, but you have a special place in your heart for people who look like you, people who've experienced what you've experienced. How real is it? Like the students that you have hundreds of students, right? Mm-hmm. How real is it for a Terrica Lynn Smith, who was Terrica Lynn Smith in year 2000, for that girl, for that man to come into the industry today and do what you've done?
I think we first have to realize that poverty has no color. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, poverty is a curse that has to be broken. And I think the more people that realize that they're living up under a curse, the more people we're able to impact and help change. Mm-hmm. And so the person that was back in 2000 didn't care about other people knowing that they were under a curse. Mm. Like, I just didn't care.
Yeah.
I was too focused on trying to find out who the heck Terrica was at this point. I'm making hundreds and thousands of dollars and I am miserable at this point in time in my life, yeah. You know, to the point where I'm at today where it's like, you know, I think it's important for everybody to know how important ownership is, but not just that, how easily it is to obtain it if you just make a few different decisions than what you did yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think, as long as I continue sharing that message, people are going to hear it and people are going to get it and receive it. But I do my best to, I don't change who I am. I'm very relatable. Although I got a resting face, I'm super nice and easy on the inside. Like, I feel like I smile a lot on the inside more than I do on the outside, you know?
You do.
Yeah. I can't help my resting face. But I think when people get beyond the resting face, they see my heart and they see who I truly am and that I genuinely care to help people get to the next level with real estate investing. So I hope that answers that.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot about this journey of discovering who Terrica Lynn is. Mm-hmm. Who are you?
I am a God-fearing, devil-beaten wife, mother, kingdom shaker. I'm talking internet influencer interrupter. Mm. I am a cycle breaker, the firstborn of my family. I am the breaker of chains. Mm.
You better talk that talk, Terrica. Who do you look up to? I know that God is leading your path, mm-hmm. right? He's sitting right here next to you on this, but in the physical human sense, who are your role models? Who do you look up to right now?
Man, that is such a great question. I would say my biggest role model right now is Viola Davis and John Maxwell.
Love them both.
Yeah, those are my biggest role models.
Very different.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So John Maxwell give perspective to it. It really makes me think and wonder, like, am I doing enough, right? Mm-hmm. And Viola Davis is that tenacity, that strength, that breaker of chains that tears down all principalities in the industry that she's in. Mm-hmm. And she flies and she nourishes. You know, I absolutely love what she stands for. She's a kingdom wife.
Yeah.
You know, kingdom mother. She's amazing. And so I those are two people I really do look up to.
What haven't you done yet, Terrica, that you still... It's on the list. Like, God, I got to get this done.
I haven't had tea with Viola Davis yet.
That's what you want?
I
want
to have tea with Viola.
You want to have tea? Let me call. Because we can make, you need me to make that happen.
I would love to make that happen, okay?
Listen, if you make it happen, yes. Can you just invite me?
Yes, right? Yes.
So another thing that I wanted to ask you about on camera, you mentioned all these investments and things that you like to get into. And you have a very strategically planned and operated investment portfolio. I know of a place, and I know of two investors who need a third investor. Mm-hmm.
The last one you put me on, Donnie, it was a no.
Last one I put you on was a no.
We talked about it. It was like, I'm not really feeling the energy.
No. Okay. This is the energy is different. In fact, you love this energy a lot.
Okay.
You love this energy significantly. And you love these people. I think you love the concept. I think this particular group of investors, you've seen what they can do already. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? You know, they're in it for the long haul. You've asked around about us already before. And those people are humble enough to just beg you for $1 million.
Me and David. Oh my goodness, y'all are hilarious.
we need 1.5 million.
Yeah, asking for 1.5 million. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? Like, just let's talk through this deal, right?
No, you don't want to talk through this with me on the camera.
I don't. You're going to eat us up?
No, I'm not going to eat you up. I don't want to do it.
You don't want to invest with us?
No.
David, you didn't tell me it was a no.
It's not a no. It's the fence.
You're on the fence.
No, you need a fence.
Oh, we need a fence. Okay.
Y'all need security.
When we do that.
I told David that I would be there. He knows this. David is also tight with the money. His deck is, you know, stingy.
So I reviewed the deck and I like the deck very much.
Of course, because it's for you and him. it's lovely for y'all.
Listen, what I wanted to show you guys is that closed mouths don't get fed.
That's
okay.
Right.
And I am incredibly hungry, so my mouth is open. We've got this project that David and I have this project.
It's amazing, and I will invest when the asset is secure.
Let's get the fence up, Dave. We can do that part. So when the asset is secure, we can look at an investment. Okay.
Yeah. With a different deck.
With the
for sure.
With a revision.
A revised deck, yeah.
I'm just writing that down. Dave, we needed a
Dave
revision.
Dave is being thrown money all over the place. Okay. Dave will not move on the deal because of his stinginess.
Okay. So the thing is, it's
and
not...
And Donnie's stinginess.
Well, it's not stinginess. It's, you know, it's a partnership and it's down the middle. You know what I mean? And so it still has to be a good deal for us. We'll be doing all the work. Mm-hmm. We have the growth plan and the strategy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk to you from this side of that. David, I tried to get to the money. As long as I know that you are there, do you think that it's a good idea?
I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I believe in you and David, like a lot, like mm-hmm. not just believe like with my words, I believe mm-hmm. with money. I just don't believe in the current asset in its current state right now. And I'm still an investor and I still pay attention to risk. So until the asset is secure and I feel comfortable, which Dave noticed already, I am patiently waiting.
Okay. That's a starting point. We understand what we have to do to secure the investment. Terica, do you have any favorite books? Like if people who are like, I love her, because people always do. They want to get started in real estate. They want to build closer to God. They want to shift and shape their mindset. Like, give us something. What are we reading? What do we need to do? What do we need to watch to just become people who are on our journey of self-discovery?
Because the Bible.
The Bible. Okay.
That's it. That's the best book in the world to me.
How often do you read the Bible?
Every day.
Every day.
Yes.
Okay.
Multiple times throughout the day.
Okay, and it's not even a Bible reading challenge for you. This is just...
I have to eat the word of God. To keep me here on this earth dealing with his people, mm-hmm. I have to stay rooted in the word. Mm. Literally, yes. That is my favorite book of my life. There's not a book in this world that I read more than the Bible. Mm. Period.
Do you have time to add another task to your day? I think mm-hmm. it would be so awesome for you to start a prayer call, like a morning prayer call.
Really?
We could do it for like 30 days. I'll be on it every single day. But maybe we read a passage from the Bible. We discuss it briefly. You share what your perspective is on it, like, because there's not probably a whole lot of time in your day for us to have open dialogue. But like, we pick a passage, we read it, you share your perspective. Maybe we put it in a community where we can then type what our perspective was or how you shifted our perspective. We pray and we go on with our day. Can we do that for the month of May for 30 days?
Oh, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about it.
Okay, let's get it. I love it. Yes. Terica, thank you so much for being here. I have loved every moment of this conversation. Thank you for being fully transparent.
Thank you.
You have some opportunities for people to become more closely connected with you.
Yes.
Tell us about what that looks like.
Just follow me on social media.
Okay.
Yeah, Female Real Estate Guru or Terica Lynn Smith on all platforms. You can catch me there.
All right. All of her details will be in the caption of wherever you are seeing this video, you guys. I hope you've loved this conversation as much as I have. I want to give a shout out to my brother, David Shands, for being the engineer off camera. He is recording this episode. So when everything goes right and it looks beautiful and the sound is crisp, it's David digging back into his roots. We will see you guys on the next episode of Full Transparency with Donnie next week. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.